I have to admit, when I opened the source files for this week's deep dive, I had a moment of genuine confusion.
Oh!
The folder was labeled Crystallography of Scandium. And I got excited. I was thinking, you know, rare earth elements, maybe some high-end aerospace tech.
Right, sci-fi laser component.
Exactly. Huh? And then I actually opened the PDF, and I kept scrolling and scrolling. There is absolutely zero scandium in here. It's all iron and carbon. It's steel. Did we honestly just grab the wrong file?
We did not. We are effectively ignoring the label on the jar and tasting the jam today.
Okay.
Because what's hidden inside those documents is a real treasure trove of data. It's a deep technical look at the secret ingredient that holds the modern world together.
So steel.
Not just any steel. We are zooming way in on the star of the show, cementite.
Cementite. That sounds like something you'd buy at a hardware store to fix a driveway.
It does, but I promise it's a lot more sophisticated than that.
I'm guessing so.
You know, we tend to look at a bridge or a car frame and think, okay, that's steel. A solid gray block of metal.
Sure.
But if you zoom in, and I mean really zoom in, down to the atomic level, steel isn't one thing. It's a microscopic universe. Mm. A landscape of competing crystals and what I like to call atomic power couples.
And cementite is one half of this power couple.
It's the dominant half in terms of personality.
Yeah.
Chemically, it's F3C. And it's not just a hard spot in the metal. It's a specific, jagged, complex crystal with a very distinct behavior.
Its personality.
Totally. It acts strangely when you heat it. It actually changes its identity when you try to break it. And it has a very toxic, dramatic relationship with its neighbors.
Okay, so we're doing a psychological profile of a crystal. I'm into it. But before its relationships, let's get the mugshot. What does this thing actually look like? Because when I think crystal, I'm thinking of salt, quartz. Nice, neat little cubes.
Yeah, cementite is definitely not a cube. In fact, it's a bit of a nightmare for crystallographers because it has what we call low symmetry.
Low symmetry.
It has an orthorhombic unit cell.
Orthorhombic.
Yeah.
Okay, for those of us who haven't touched a geometry textbook in a decade, what does that look like?
Imagine a cube made of soft clay. Now, stretch it so it's longer in one direction and squish it so it's narrower in another.
So like a distorted brick.
Exactly. A distorted brick, that's your basic building block. And inside that little brick, there's a very strict recipe.
Okay.
You have exactly 12 iron atoms and 4 carbon atoms. That is the magic ratio.
12 to 4, always.
Precisely. But here's where it gets architectural. Those atoms aren't just thrown in a bag. They have assigned seats.
Assigned seats.
Mm-hmm. The iron atoms occupy two different types of positions. We call them wake-off positions, but you can think of them as the mirror seats and the general seats.
The mirror seats. Is that literal?
In a mathematical sense, yes. 4 of the iron atoms sit directly on symmetry planes, mirror planes within the crystal. They're the anchors.
Got it.
The other 8 iron atoms are sort of floating in general positions between them. And because of how they all sit, the whole structure forms these pleated layers.
Pleated?
Mm.
Like the filter in my car's radiator. Or an accordion.
That's a great visualization.
Yeah.
Imagine sheets of iron atoms that are crimped or folded, stacking up in an ABAD pattern.
Okay.
And the carbon atoms, they're small enough that they get tucked into the little gaps, the interstitial spaces, right inside the folds of those pleats.
So it's like a really dense 3D puzzle where the carbon acts like grout, locking the iron tiles together.
That is a perfect analogy. And that locked-in structure, that specific pleated architecture, is what gives cementite its legendary hardness. It is effectively a ceramic living inside a metal.
Okay, so a ceramic brick made of iron and carbon. But the documents mention something that really surprised me. This stuff is magnetic, but only kind of.
It has a magnetic personality, yes. Cementite is ferromagnetic. It'll stick to a magnet, but it's incredibly sensitive to heat, way more so than regular iron.
This is the Curie temperature thing, right? The point where a magnet just gives up.
You're correct. The Curie temperature is the threshold where all that thermal energy just overcomes the magnetic alignment.
And for pure iron, that's really high.
Way up there, 770 degrees Celsius, very stable. But cementite, its Curie temperature is only 186 degrees Celsius.
186. That's nothing. That's baking cookies temperature.
It is.
So theoretically, if I have a chunk of pure cementite and I put it in my oven at 375 Fahrenheit, it just stops sticking to the fridge.
Completely. The heat just shakes the atoms enough to scramble that perfect alignment. And what's fascinating is that humans have likely noticed this for thousands of years.
No way. Ancient blacksmiths.
Even further back. Pliny the Elder.
The Roman guy who died in the volcano.
The very same. In his Natural History from around 77 AD, he talks about a stone called hematites. And he noted that unlike a normal lodestone, this specific stone wouldn't attract iron.
And you think he was looking at cementite?
It's a strong theory in the field. He might have been dealing with iron ores that had been heated past that low Curie point. He was seeing the physics of the atom without a microscope.
That is wild. He saw the off switch, but didn't know where the wiring went. The magnetism isn't just on or off, is it? The notes mention anisotropy.
Mm-hmm. Magnetocrystalline anisotropy. It's a mouthful.
It really is.
But the concept is actually very intuitive. Remember that distorted brick shape we talked about?
The squished cube.
Because the shape isn't perfect, the magnetism isn't the same in every direction. Think of a piece of wood. It's easy to split it with the grain, right?
Sure. One chop.
But try to chop it against the grain.
A nightmare. You're just hacking at it.
Exactly. Cementite has a magnetic grain. The easy direction for the magnetic spins to align is along the 001 axis. It just flows naturally.
And the hard direction?
That's 100 axis. It resists it. You have to push a lot harder, energetically speaking, to get the magnetism to line up that way.
So it's stubborn. It has a preferred direction.
Extremely stubborn. And that stubbornness isn't just a magnetic quirk. It's a clue to its mechanical strength.
Right. We want strength. But here's where I got stuck in the reading. The section on elastic moduli, how stiff it is, it says the shear modulus is low, like shockingly low.
This is my favorite paradox in material science. If you look at the raw numbers, the shear modulus, specifically C44, is exceptionally small.
How small?
It's 2 times smaller than aluminum.
Wait, aluminum? I can crush an aluminum can with one hand. You're telling me this hard ceramic crystal is technically flimsier than a soda can?
In that one specific direction, if you just gently nudge it, yes, it seems compliant. But here is the twist. Despite that low stiffness, it has a massive ideal shear strength.
How can it be flexible and strong at the same time? That feels contradictory.
It comes down to a phenomenon called monoclinic stiffening. This is where the crystal gets clever. You know, Chinese finger traps?
Yeah, the little woven tube you pull and it gets tighter.
Exactly. When you try to shear cementite, when you apply that massive stress, the crystal doesn't just snap, it deforms. It shifts from that orthorhombic shape to a monoclinic shape. It tilts.
It changes its geometry under pressure.
It changes its identity. And in doing so, it actually increases the three-dimensional covalent bonding between the atoms. Effectively, the harder you push it, the stiffer it becomes.
Wow.
It fights back.
So the stress itself triggers a defense mechanism. The material knows it's under attack and fortifies the walls.
Yes. It actively resists deformation by forging stronger bonds in real time. But eventually, if you push hard enough, something has to move. We call this slip.
Atoms sliding past each other.
And I'm guessing, with all those pleated layers and the carbon atoms tucked in, sliding is not easy.
A traffic nightmare. The atoms want to move, but the jump distance, what we call the Burgers vector, is huge.
The Burgers vector. Sounds delicious. Sadly, not edible. It's just the distance an atom has to hop to get to the next stable spot in the lattice. In regular iron, it's a short hop. Easy. In cementite, it's like a long jump across a canyon.
So because the jump is so big, they mostly just refuse to move.
Exactly. And if atoms refuse to move, the material is hard. That's the definition of hardness.
But nothing is perfect, right? Even this crystal has to have weak spots.
It does. It can have defects, vacancies, places where a carbon atom is just missing. And this is actually really important for nuclear reactors.
Nuclear reactors. How do we get from bridges to reactors?
Because steel is used in reactor vessels. And the report highlights that if you bombard this stuff with radiation, you can knock iron atoms right out of their seats.
You create stacking faults.
You disturb that perfect pleated order. You're knocking bricks out of the wall. And if you have too many of those faults, the material can become brittle, unpredictable. It's a reminder that even the strongest crystal has an Achilles heel.
Okay, so we've got a tough, stubborn crystal that gets stronger when you squeeze it. But in the real world, cementite doesn't live alone. We said it has a roommate.
The roommate is ferrite, and they are the odd couple of the periodic table. Ferrite is basically pure iron. It's soft, ductile, you can bend it.
And cementite is the hard, brittle one.
Right. And together they form perlite, named because under a microscope, the layered structure diffracts light like a pearl. It's actually beautiful, but mechanically, it's a genius composite. You get the flexibility of ferrite and the strength of cementite.
Like reinforced concrete.
Exactly. But here is the critical question. How do they sit next to each other? They don't just mash together randomly. They have a handshake.
A handshake, you mean how the crystals physically align?
Right. They align specific faces to minimize energy. And this is where a lot of older textbooks actually got it wrong.
Oh, we love a good textbooks were wrong moment. What do we used to think?
For decades, the standard theory was that they followed the Pitch-Petch relationship or the Bagariotsky relationship.
Those sound like law firms.
They do. If you've been injured by falling steel, call Pitch-Petch and Bagariotsky.
Ah.
They were just mathematical models of which atom lines up with which. And for a long time, we thought, close enough. But modern high-precision measurements have shown those theories are often slightly off.
So what's the real deal?
The actual optimal fit is described by the Izachev orientation relationship.
Izachev. And why is that one the winner?
It's the most comfortable handshake. When the crystals line up the Izachev way, the boundary between them has the lowest possible energy.
Nature is lazy. It always wants the lowest energy state.
Always. But this isn't just academic trivia. This handshake determines whether your car rusts apart in 5 years or 20.
Wait, hold on. How does the crystal alignment affect rust? I thought rust was just water meets metal.
It is oxidation. But think about where the rust attacks. When perlite corrodes, it happens through pitting. The rust drills holes.
Okay.
In this relationship, the ferrite acts as the anode. It's the part that gets eaten away. The cementite is the cathode. It stays put.
So the rust eats the soft stuff.
Right. But the rust needs a way in, a path. And the data shows corrosion is worst where the interface fit is bad.
The bad handshake.
The bad handshake. If the ferrite and cementite are aligned in that perfect Izachev orientation, the boundary is tight, low energy, it's a locked door. But if they're misaligned, the interface energy is high, it's chaotic, and that high energy is a welcome mat for corrosion.
So a bad atomic fit means the rust digs deeper.
Significantly deeper. The pits don't just stay on the surface. They turn into tunnels that run right along the ferrite layers. So the geometry of how these two crystals touch determines whether a bridge gets surface rust or if it rots out from the inside.
That is mind-blowing. The safety of our infrastructure comes down to a few degrees of atomic rotation.
It really is architectural design at the atomic scale.
So if we know this, can we control it? Because we don't just grow steel in a garden. We beat it into shape.
Mm.
We roll it, smash it. Does that mess up the handshake?
Oh, it creates chaos. This is where we get into texture.
Texture, like fabric.
In metallurgy, yeah.
Yeah.
It means the statistical alignment of all the grains. Imagine running dough through a pasta maker. That's cold rolling.
Squishing it flat.
When you do that to steel, the soft ferrite grains rotate and align pretty easily. They go with the flow.
Ferrite is compliant.
Exactly. But cementite, remember, it's stubborn.
It refuses to move.
It resists rotation. Even when the steel is heavily deformed, the cementite just sits there. But engineers found a trick. It's called cross-rolling.
Roll it one way, then turn it.
Exactly. You roll it, turn it 90 degrees, roll it again, back and forth. This forces the microstructure to do something unique. Instead of just flattening out, you create intersecting shear bands.
And what does that do to our stubborn cementite?
It forces it to bend in two directions at once. The layers, the lamellae, become doubly bent.
Doubly bent, like a waffle or an egg carton.
Think of a complex wave pattern. It's like molecular origami. You're forcing the hard cementite to participate in the structure rather than just sitting there like a rock in a stream. And that distributes the strength more evenly.
So let's zoom out. We've gone from a 12 iron atom unit cell to its bizarre magnetic properties at 186 degrees to this atomic handshake that determines rust, and now to smashing it with rollers.
It's quite a journey for a little crystal.
What does this all mean for the person listening right now? Driving their car over a bridge or looking at the beams in their office? Why does this level of detail matter?
It matters because safety isn't an accident. It's engineered. The reason we can build skyscrapers that sway without snapping or cars that crumple to save the passenger, it's because we understand these mechanisms.
It's knowing that the crystal will stiffen when it's shocked.
Exactly. We know that monoclinic stiffening lets the steel absorb energy without failing. We know that controlling purity can favor that Izachev orientation, making the steel last longer. We aren't just mixing ingredients in a pot anymore. We are designing materials atom by atom.
It makes me look at a rusty fence differently. It's not just old metal. It's a failure of the atomic handshake.
It is, and it raises a really exciting possibility for the future.
Oh. What's the next frontier?
Well, we know radiation can manipulate atoms. We know processing changes the orientation. So could we one day engineer a super steel?
What would that look like?
Imagine a material where we don't just hope for the best, but where we actively manipulate the orientation of every single cementite grain.
Custom placing every crystal.
Exactly. If we ensure every single interface is a perfect iZeiShev fit, we could potentially create a steel that is effectively immune to rust and stronger than anything we have today. Bridges that last 1,000 years.
A rust-proof, super-strong future built on better handshakes. I love it.
It's all in the geometry.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into the hidden universe of cementite. Next time you see a skyscraper, remember the billions of little distorted bricks holding it up. Thanks for listening, and stay curious.
Goodbye, everyone.